Welcome to Kingdom, a story by Ollie Francis. Episode 10, Judo. The Applewood guards stood either side of the scent path as Dewdrop entered the fallen dell, holding their paws to their marks as she passed by. A few steps further, and she noticed two more foxes slipping like shadows through the undergrowth at her side, keeping themselves at a distance just beyond her immediate scentscape, though it was clear they were not trying to mask their presence. Their footsteps were, if anything, a little too deliberate, as if it were somehow unnatural for them to make themselves known to her. "You know we are here," they seemed to say, "but only because we choose it." In light of the rumours of Greypaw's ghost roaming the northern bloodwoods, it should be comforting that the Applewood's shadow stalkers had finally pledged themselves to her father's cause and taken his mark. But even so, every shadow of the forest unsettled her. Each one could contain a fox, and she would never know. She calmed her heart and continued along the scent path. The smells of the fallen dell were already changing. The scat of its previous occupier had been removed and replaced with fresh spores. Dewdrop could not yet tell which scat might belong to which fox, the individual notes lost in the cacophonic blast of foreignness that overpowered the scentscape, and the deer could only guess as to the health and mood of the Bloodwood's guests. In time, the distinctiveness of the fox's offerings would mellow as their digestion settled and became more accustomed to the Highwood diet, eventually becoming near indistinguishable from Highwood's own foxes. At that time, the scat would become more communicative, but for now, the message of the boundary was pungently simple. She was entering Applewood territory. Dewdrop waited at the edge of the dell to be formally received, where creatures hindmarked with the Lord of Applewood's print fussed quietly along the clearing's edges, collecting blood fruit from the bloodmarked trees that grew there. There were some bold enough to lay a few acorns before her while she stood, clearly unaware that the High Family of Highwood only ate acorns direct from the blood oak itself. She showed no offence, giving a simple turn of the head in acknowledgement. A few heartbeats later, and a fox with a thin, overly active tail and a heart mark of Applewood on its side trotted over and gave Dewdrop a formal greeting, informing her that the Lord of Applewood would meet her there shortly. Dewdrop lay down among the late stems of bluebells and waited. The dead blood oak limb that gave the dell its name lay across the centre of the clearing, its leafless branches bridging the banks of a delicate stream. It had fallen generations ago, the forest plants growing up around it, making it appear as though it was sinking into a wide green puddle. The heart who had met Dewdrop had entered the darkness of the tree's shadow and disappeared, and now she emerged flanked by another fox, the Lord of Applewood's daughter, the one whose unearthly stare had haunted Dewdrop so much the previous evening. No further creatures emerged from the shadow of the blood oak branch. "Just the two of them, then," thought Dewdrop, trying not to give away her unease. The Lord of Applewood's daughter walked easily enough, despite the welts on her front paws. In the bright afternoon sun, the red sores looked especially painful, the skin torn and blistered and plucked clean of fur up to her ankles. A shiver of revulsion shook Dewdrop's back. She flicked her tail to cover up the movement, as though freeing herself of some particularly bothersome fly.
"The daughter of the king," signed the fox as Dewdrop stood to accept her.
Her scent was indistinguishable from the general air of fox in the dell, though her sign words were fluid and slower than expected. The foxes of Highwood tended to sign quickly, their words tinged with an accent that hinted superiority. "Don't read too much into it," her father had warned her. "Every creature has their own way of signing, and this is theirs. They mean nothing by it." But this fox's sign words were quite different. She signed as though each word were ready to betray her.
"The daughter of Applewood," Dewdrop replied in the formal manner of greeting.
"You are Harfoot, although I'm told that's not your given name."
"My mother and father called me Strongfoot," signed the fox, "but that was when I was young. They call me Harfoot now, like everyone else."
"Which name would you like me to use?"
"Whichever you choose," shrugged the fox. though I think it may cause some confusion among our Bloodwoods if you call me by my birth name. I think I'm happy with Harford. My father was born to another name, Dewdrop signed gently. He was Morning Light until his antlers grew. I've heard the songs, signed Harford. Dewdrop shifted a little, the memory of the songs at the signing stone of Morningside caught in her mind like goose grass in her fur. My father claimed his curse and made it his own, she signed, and now he is king. The fox held a ragged paw to her mark. Then I shall follow his example and insist upon Harford, she signed. Dewdrop looked over at the fallen blood oak branch and offered the fox an inquiring image of her father. My father's resting, signed the fox. It is a long way to Applewood. He means to return as soon as he has gathered his strength for the journey. Please forgive him if he does not join us today.
And your brother?
Harford looked about the dell. I'm afraid I do not know where he is, she signed.
I hear the Lord of Applewood has chosen you as his headmarked one.
The fox seemed to flinch a little at that.
Of course, I may have been misinformed.
No, signed the fox. It is true. I have been honoured with this duty. My brother is needed back in Applewood. I hope the king does not take it as an insult. We know it is not the usual arrangement.
It is unusual, signed Dewdrop. But it is of no matter. I'm sure you'll make an excellent ambassador for Applewood.
The fox gave a sign of thanks.
I thought I might introduce you to some of the local shoulders, signed Dewdrop. Show you their places in the forest and the work they do. My father thinks it would be helpful in growing good relations between our Bloodwoods. The headmarked ambassador of Applewood should know and be known by the shoulders of Highwood if we are to grow closer.
Thank you. We will grow strong. But I'm not yet familiar with the scent paths here. There are so many. It took some effort to find my way back from the Citadel this morning.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. I will arrange for more guides.
Oh, we have many guides, signed the fox. The king has been more than generous in the hide-mark creatures he sent us. It was my own fault. I did not use them. It was early. I get restless, you see, and it seemed a shame to wake them.
They should have been awake for you, signed Dewdrop. I will speak with the heart and have them replaced.
No, thank you, signed the fox. I did not check to see if they were awake. I'm so used to going out on my own I did not consider it. But I understand the king would not want those from a foreign Bloodwood wandering his forest unsupervised. I'm sorry if I've tested his trust.
No, signed Dewdrop. Of course not. You carry his mark. We are part of the same kingdom now, and you have the freedom of the forest. You can go anywhere you wish without a guide. Dismiss them all, whatever you want. But there are many scent paths in Highwood, some as old as the forest itself. And said the deepest paths are those Junos himself used when he planted the Bloodwood. It's perhaps his scent that lays so far beneath the earth, bound to the roots of the mountain.
Oh, the song of Juno's footsteps, signed the fox.
You've heard it?
Your father sent a troop of singers to Applewood last summer. They danced it as part of the summons. There was a moment of awkwardness as the fox realized her mistake. The summons had indeed been sent out last summer, shortly after Dewdrop's father had taken control of Highwood, and Applewood had taken longer than any other Bloodwood in answering the call. Dewdrop's cousin Fernleg had told her that there were some among the high-marked creatures of the kingdom who believed the Lord of Applewood's long delay in coming to Highwood was outright rebellion. It was a wonder, her cousin told her, that the king had not already declared war and replaced the foxes with some other high family.
I realize it was a long time ago, signed the broken-footed fox.
For a moment it looked as though the creature were about to start gnawing at her feet there and then.
You have a good memory for song, signed Dewdrop, eager to spare her any further embarrassment. Have you brought many singers with you? I have not often had the chance to see an Applewood song.
I'm afraid not, signed the fox, clearly grateful for the change of subject.
We have some green masons, though I'm afraid they know only psalms. They're practical. Do you dance yourself?
No, signed Dewdrop, quickly.
Well, not anymore. I did before, a long time ago.
You enjoyed it?
Yes, I wanted to be a singer.
You sang well. I'm sure you would have been good.
The gods had different ideas, signed Dewdrop.
The fox looked over the dell. Her eyes seemed to find the fallen branch.
You think the gods stopped you dancing?
Dewdrop straightened a little.
My father became king, she sighed.
The fox hummed understanding.
I think I would have been a green mason, she sighed, if I'd had a choice.
I'm sure half the world would rather choose another path, if they had the chance, sighed Dewdrop.
But my father says we can only walk the path the gods have given us.
The fox gave no response. She seemed to be searching for the gap in the canopy above them from where the mighty branch had fallen.
You say you brought green masons with you, continued Dewdrop.
We have, sighed the fox. I was hoping they would help me understand the green masonry here in Highwood. The tree wall is quite remarkable. We have nothing like it in Applewood.
You have a citadel, sighed the deer.
We do, sighed the fox. Not as grand as Farclaw's, of course.
I imagine the principles behind a citadel and a tree wall are largely the same.
Oh, no, sighed the fox. The citadels work because they have a bloodwood tree at their centres. The bloodwood tree binds the other trees together, causing them to grow as one. Your tree wall encompasses your entire bloodwood. It took us half a day's walk to get from here to the citadel. Yes, there are still bloodmut trees nearby, but the bloodwood's influence is far weaker. To grow a tree wall so far from the bloodwood relies on an entirely different green masonry. The psalms you have here in Highwood are unique. They're not sung anywhere else in the kingdom. Blackfoot's root song, the green branch binding song.
You seem to know them, sighed Dewdrop. And you are not from Highwood.
I know of them, sighed the fox. But that's all. I've never seen them dance, nor seen their effect firsthand. It is the one thing I want to do while I am here, if I can.
The fox sighed more openly now, the words less calculated than before. Her bitten paws flashed merrily as though she had forgotten to hide them.
I have a picture for you,
sighed the deer, imagining the pass of the wood that led away from the citadel, across Long River and out towards the tree wall. She made an image of the green masons there, the trees busy with their tiny bodies, the leaves above their heads quivering with activity.
The shoulder of that part of the tree wall is a badger named Treetail, she sighed. If you are going to see Highwood at its best, I can't think of a better place to start.
The fox looked back at the fallen blood oak branch. The Lord of Applewood should have been the one to have met Dewdrop there, but there had been no sign of him since the deer had entered the dell. The quick-tailed fox who had greeted Dewdrop sat by the hollow of the huge branch, watching them. A team of other foxes lay among the smaller branches, only visible due to a sudden beam of sunlight that was filtering down through the blood oak leaves, setting their red coats ablaze where they hid among the wild flowers of the clearing.
"Perhaps the Lord of Applewood would like to join us?" offered Dewdrop.
"No," sighed Harfoot quickly. "My father's busy. We have a long journey to prepare for, and there are many arrangements in order to bring the Three Horns Law to Applewood."
"Well," sighed Dewdrop, "it is perhaps just you and me."
The journey to the Evenside tree wall took them past Rippledown and Bluebank, beyond the canopy of the blood oak, and out into the wild forest. The fox seemed especially taken by the contours of Rippledown, spending a good few hundred heartbeats running up and down the undulating hills, causing her guards to panic trying to keep up with her. Dewdrop had no guard to panic, and she tumbled on the hills without fear, braying with pleasure as the two of them skittered and bounded on the slopes. It was wonderful to be in the outer forest again, away from the blood oak's eternal shadow. Dewdrop knew every inch of the outer regions of the bloodwood, the valleys and the high places, the bogs around Long River and the uneven ground of Ulrock. They were all hers. Soon they would be Harfoot's too, and then she would have no need of her guard. Maybe then they could visit some of the night dances in the bloodwood's darker regions. Dewdrop busied herself with imagined tomorrows as they made their way across the ancient scent paths of the forest and out towards the setting sun. By the time they reached the Evenside tree wall, the light was filtering sideways through the close-knit trunks, slicing apart the evening air in luminous lines. The tree wall stood before them, a solid wall of bark and leaf, every branch woven back along the trunk of its neighbours to form one unbroken sheet of living wood peeling away in either direction. The fox pressed her snout to the roots of the wall and then as far as she could up the trunks, whimpering wonder at what she found there. "I didn't get a chance to get this close when we came through yesterday," she sighed, turning back to Dewdrop. "Look here," she sighed. "And here, there's not enough space for a paw to fit through, and yet there are saplings here and here between the trunks ready to take over when the older trees die. See how they wind up through the branches? The young ones are just as much a part of the wall as the older trees. The whole thing grows together as one. Do you know how they plant these? The placement seems to follow Brokenback's planting pattern, but I don't understand how the roots can take all this. The older trees should starve them out without a full bloodwood root to act as mother's milk to them."
"I have no idea," sighed Dewdrop. "The magic of the Green Masons is beyond me."
"Oh, it's not magic," sighed the fox. "It's song. It's history and it's faith, but it's not magic." She came closer to Dewdrop. Even standing tall as she was, she barely reached the deer's chest. When she sighed as if asking were shameful. "Do you think the Green Masons here would know? Is that something they would share with me?"
Dewdrop felt it between them. Trust, like flies in the summer air.
For a heartbeat, she almost lowered her head to the fox to rub jaw against jaw, staining her skin with the scent of red fur. She stopped the thought before she could share it.
"They are Green Masons, not Green Seers," she sighed, standing tall. "And this is not the Citadel. I am the daughter of the king. They all carry my father's mark. They will tell you anything I ask them to tell you."
"I'm from Applewood," sighed the fox. "They might not want to share their secrets with me." The deer huffed away the suggestion.
"Our bloodwoods are bound," she sighed. "Any knowledge shared will only make our bloodwoods stronger."
She turned to the wide expanse of the tree wall and brayed for attention. In a heartbeat, the trees were alive with creatures scurrying from its high places. Rootsmiths flooded out of holes among the tree wall like ants emerging from the nest. She turned back to Harford.
"Where do you want to start?" she sighed.
The fox gave an involuntary whisper of joy.
"Let's start with the soil," she sighed.
Dewdrop found a heart-marked pine marten among the crowd. "Who are your best rootsmiths and soil rights?" The heart signed for 5 or 6 of the Green Masons to step forward.
"This is the daughter of Applewood," signed Dewdrop.
"She is headmarked with both marks of Applewood and Highwood. She is headmarked representative to the king. There is no mark higher than hers outside the high family itself."
Dewdrop fixed her eyes on the fox.
"And you will tell her anything she wants to know," she signed. The rest of the Green Masons were dismissed, disappearing into the tree line to leave behind a few stoats, 3 squirrels, and a single hedgehog, under the supervision of the heart-marked pine marten. Harford signed respectfully with them, following their dances as they recited their psalms. Dewdrop followed along as best as she could, but the psalms were unfathomably dull. There were songs about twisting roots, sifting fine stones from damp soil, and a lengthy drone about tending the fungal content of soil humus. Harfoot's guards, hiding nearby in the growing darkness, seemed similarly bored. She was sure one of them was asleep. Another crept closer, still under the cover of bracken, though just visible to Dewdrop.
"Is she often like this?" asked Dewdrop.
The fox in the undergrowth looked around as though checking if any of its comrades were watching it. Clearly, they were not supposed to make themselves known to those they were stalking.
"Always," it signed.
Dewdrop found she was beginning to better understand the scent of her guests now. This fox's scent was different to Harford's, still distinctly fox, but it was so much fainter, as though the creature had recently bathed in the river. Barely registered on her scentscape. The creature's coat was the deepest shade of brown, almost black in the dull light of the first heartbeats of night.
"She can go on like this all night," it sighed. "We often have to find our own amusements while we wait."
Dewdrop bristled a little. "Is it not a pleasure to serve your high family?" she asked.
"Always," sighed the creature. "But it isn't hurt to find a little something to keep the mind alert while she drones on."
Drones on. Dewdrop turned away from the fox in the undergrowth, disgusted by its impudence. She'd have to speak to Harford. The creature would be markless by morning. The dark fox chirped softly for her attention. Dewdrop scanned the rest of the undergrowth to see if any of the other Applewood foxes were as shocked as she was at this creature's boldness, but they had all faded into the night. Dewdrop turned to the rude creature, tipping her head to show her displeasure in being called in such an overtly familiar manner.
"We're all going to dance while we wait," it sighed.
"Dance?
We're pretty good. You like dances, don't you?"
"What sort of dances?" sighed Dewdrop. "I've seen enough psalms for a lifetime."
"No," sighed the fox in the undergrowth. "Not psalms. Real songs. Applewood songs. Old ones. Never danced before in Highwood."
Dewdrop glanced back at Harford. The Lord of Applewood's daughter was half buried in a root pit, watching a stoat of some sort play around in the muck. "Where?" she asked the fox.
"We found a clearing, just past the tree line," sighed the dark fox. "Just over there. The rest have already started. If you want to see, you'd best come now."
Dewdrop couldn't remember a clearing this close to the tree wall. But then again, the fox was pointing her in a direction well away from the scent path she knew. She looked over at Harford again.
"What about her?" "She won't care," sighed the fox. "I told you, she'll be there all night. Won't notice. We've got a few guards still watching, here and there. They'll let us know when it's time to come back."
"Do you talk to all your hindmark betters like this?" asked Dewdrop. The fox in the undergrowth looked unconcerned.
"Look," it sighed, "I don't want to miss my part. If you come, I'll teach you myself. Or we can dance together if you like. Or you can stay here and listen to this drivel. Up to you. Well, I'm going now."
It crept back into the shadows, its dark cloak melting into the shade of undergrowth so that even Dewdrop's night eyes could not follow it. She ducked down to test the air where the fox had lay. The creature's scent was so faint it would be gone in a few heartbeats. There was a rustle in the bracken, quick and harsh as though the fox were begging her to follow. Harfoot and her green masons were entirely engulfed in a debate about different types of root fungus. The fox was mimicking the steps of a mink in the psalm, stiff and functional. There was no sound to it at all, no emotional vocalizations, no hums, no bleats, no tune at all, just cold, hard sign words stripped of anything that made them worth dancing. "She can go on all night," the dark fox had told her. All night? Why, the gods should be dead by morning if she had to wait here all night. She had enough time to watch a real dance or two. She wouldn't be long. They wouldn't even notice, as long as she was quiet. Dewdrop slipped into the undergrowth, moving away from the tree wall, away from the scent path, to follow the fox into the thicker parts of the forest. Its river-like scent hung on the bracken like morning mist, gone in a few heartbeats. It took all her attention to follow the trail. The forest grew darker. She was far from the tree wall now. 200 heartbeats at least, maybe 300. Through the branches overhead, the dark bulk of the blood oak stood outlined against the pale sky. The sound of the creatures at the tree wall had lessened, drowning beneath the hum of wind and tree and insect in their place. It was quiet. Her own footsteps tore the dark like claws. Maybe she should turn back. Maybe the fox didn't want her to follow. It was ridiculous anyway, the thought of a king's daughter dancing with hindmark hunters. She listened hard for the dark fox. An unnatural swish of leaf on fur sounded just ahead of her. Then, again to the side. Another fox come to dance? She stopped, and the swish stopped with her. "I'm going back," she signed to the darkness. There was nothing there to reply. She turned to trace her own scent back to the tree wall, and the head of a fox loomed out of the undergrowth, blocking her way. It had a flash of white fur beneath its chin. Its right ear was torn in two at the root, the wound healed over long ago. This was not the same fox she'd signed with at the tree wall. "I'm going back," she signed again, but this fox did not let her pass. "Move," she signed, stepping closer. The fox bared its teeth and snapped at her legs. It was too much. Dewdrop turned, bounding through the bracken in high leaps to carry her over the tall stems. She twisted past a tree, trying to put its trunk between her and the creature. There was a tearing at the skin on her heel as she changed direction, the pain unbalancing her and sending her tumbling to the floor. The thing had bitten her. The new fox rolled and found its feet again in a heartbeat, but Dewdrop was already up and bounding in the other direction, bleating in alarm as loud as she could manage. Was this hunger blight? Could the thing not see her father's mark on her forehead? It didn't matter. She had to get back to the tree wall. The fox nipped at her legs again, and she managed to connect a kick with its head. The thing yelped but stayed on its feet. It was fast, faster than she was in the bracken. She couldn't see the floor through the fractured leaves. If she fell, she could break a leg, and then the thing would be on her in a moment. But the fox could run beneath the leaves, seeing every rock, dip, and branch in its way. It leapt from the leaves like a fish from water and caught her leg again, higher now, close to her rump, fangs penetrating her skin, slipping in deeper than was possible. She fell to the floor again, but the fox clung on. She rolled over it, trying to crush it with her weight, but it twisted out of the way, jaws still locked. She had to get it off. She rose, putting the full weight from her legs onto the creature's lower body, pressing down into its soft underbelly as hard as she could. It yelped, and she felt its jaws release. She turned, unsure which way to run. She had lost the direction of the tree wall. The blood oak was no longer visible through the darkness of the forest canopy. The fox was upright, taking advantage of her delay, limping slightly now as it circled, waiting to see which way she would go. The flash of white on its chin held a scar beneath the fur, she realized. This was a battle-worn creature. One of Applewood's foxes? It had to be. It had the smell of river, just like the dark fox she had followed from the tree wall. It lowered its head, panting but patient, waiting. This wasn't hunger blight. The thing was thinking. It was calculating its best chance of attack. Even now, with its limp, it was more maneuverable than her. She had no idea how badly she was hurt. There was no pain. Energy burned in every limb. She wanted to run, but she needed a head start if she was going to escape those teeth. She needed some way to trick the thing. She forced herself to tremble. It wasn't hard. Her body obeyed as though she had told it to breathe. Her limbs shook, tremors spreading across her flesh like ripples across a pond. She backed away as though submitting, and the fox stepped closer, slow, cautious. It was only a few steps from her now. It was time to strike. She pivoted on the spot, bringing around her rear legs and catching the fox on the side of the head. She didn't stop to watch it stagger. She leapt into the deepest bracken again and fled, not caring about the direction. There was crashing to her right. How had it caught her so quickly? The thing had reeled, hadn't it? She had struck the fox like she was striking a stepping stone across Long River. Yet here it was, back with her again. It was so quick. This had to be hunger blight. It had to be. No sane animal would hunt like this, would risk injury on its own against the larger prey. She twisted away, put the trunk of another tree between them, but the thing had already made it to the other side of her, the bracken snapping as it slipped through the stems on her other side. How had it moved so fast? She changed direction again, but the thing was faster, and it seemed to be everywhere at once, left, right, before her, behind her. There was more than one. There was a pack. She turned again, hoping to find a way between them, but the forest undergrowth erupted in front of her. Something huge hurled its way out of the darkness, wide and solid and weighty as a signing stone. It struck her full on, and for a heartbeat she felt tusks against her skin, the river stink of boar mixing with the smell of blood in her snout. She felt herself tumbling backwards, up into the air, the ground disappearing from beneath her and the forest swirling as the world was uprooted around her. She crashed through a rotten oak branch, the wood bursting against her ribs like lightning, her head landing on something hard and unforgiving. Darkness swirled and the air became thick as water. Movement hummed in her ears. The stone-like stench of blood stained everything, but beneath it there was fox and boar, faint like rocks from the river. Two figures stood over her. One was too huge to focus on. The other was the dark fox she had met from the tree wall. Both of them were breathing hard as though they'd been running. She had to warn them about the mad fox in the forest, but her body didn't want to move. Her mind didn't want to think. A third figure joined the two standing over her, its jaw swollen on the right side, blood dripping from the ragged edge of its panting tongue. There it is, she thought. There's the fox with the scarred chin and the torn ear who'd stalked her through the undergrowth. Careful, she thought, not knowing who it was she was sending the thought to. That fox is mad. It chased me through the woods. It stared like Lucifer when the brightwood flowers bloomed. It bites off the end of its own feet. You need to get it some meat. Feed it some blood fruit. Get back its mind before it hurts someone. But no, she thought. No, that's not right. That's not the same fox as the one at the Citadel. This one here is different. Something precise and pungent came to her nose. Her paw was held to her snout. and powerful herbs tickled the damp skin, smelling of cloves and honey and something else, sharp and sickly. A greater darkness edged in on the lesser darkness of the night. The figures over her cooed softly. "She should have warned them," she remembered. "I have to tell them about the fox in the forest." She tried to rise herself up, but the herb seemed to keep her down. She struggled against it, but it was too strong. Then she remembered again. Oh, how silly of her. She didn't need to warn them. Couldn't she see the fox was already there? She felt foolish, an idiot for not noticing. But it didn't last for long. She was so tired. Maybe if she rested, then she would tell them in the morning. Yes, that was good. She'd tell them in the morning. She lay back on the broken bed of the rotten oak, and darkness flowed across the world like water. She would tell them in the morning, she thought. But already, she could not remember what it was she was meant to say. You've been listening to Kingdom, a story by Ollie Francis. To learn more, visit olliefrancis.co.uk, where you can discover how to support the project and influence where the story's going. Until then, may the gods always hear your song.